말해 다 기승하면서 기부 중후단 진단 침보세대 우여선시에다 기부 침보세대 강사지 간에실라그릴라는 심지에 탐제 내디규 주변다 심지에 탐제 동안 저야 된다 잠이지곰 니곰발라티네 안심 가소리 예 Gomnadine, Simja Tamji, Kiki, and Kawakoya, you led a new Mobatia Bangje, Mels, Jibaya, Dundala, and Simja Tamji, Yasanji Salakuki, Dichudo, Simja Tamji, Sanyu Koba, Tobraji, and Dine Sim Jacan, Jaju Sim Gula, you can Gasatilla, some Dinis Dange, and Jaju Sim Gula, you can Gasatilla, Kibu Chimbo says Din Lagres, Kibu Chimbu Korsi.
我也送一下的, good evening. Last week we continued to look at the beings of three capacities, or the spiritual aspirants of initial, intermediate, and greatest capacity. And last week we looked in particular at the being of greatest or supreme capacity, and it was mentioned that such a being, having reflected on suffering with great intensity, and has then taken their understanding, their personal understanding of suffering, and related it to others, and generated the minds of love and compassion, and having generated love and compassion for all sentient beings, they then take it further and they commit to striving to lead to all beings to a state of enlightenment. And in order to achieve that, they commit to guiding sentient beings to eliminate the causes of suffering, the afflicted minds and contaminated karma, as well as to accumulate the causes for happiness. And in order to be able to lead beings skillfully in the accumulation of the causes for happiness and the elimination of the causes of suffering, the practitioner commits to becoming a Buddha for the sake of others. And the being who generates bodhicitta and they continue, such a being is a being of greatest capacity. The Lamrim tradition, or the stages of the path that have been compiled in the Lamrim presentation, these are all practices of the Mahayana Dharma, and that is because the full translation of the Lamrim would be the graduated stages of the path to enlightenment. So because of that goal, enlightenment, these are all the practices there are presented in a correct sequence that lead to enlightenment. So the practitioner has as their goal from the outset enlightenment for the sake of others. And with this as their motivation, they engage in the practices that are common or shared with a being of initial capacity, a spiritual aspirant of initial capacity. So they're engaging in these practices that are shared, but they are doing so with the motivation of the Mahayana. And thereafter they progress and they engage in the practices that are shared or in common with a being of intermediate capacity. But they are doing so with the motivation of the Mahayana, engaging in the practices that are shared with the being of intermediate capacity. And thereafter, when those are developed well, they engage in the practices that are unique to a being of supreme capacity.
And the Kibu Chung Lamjimba, Kasuri, Kibu Chung, the Tumor Lamjimba, Shet, and Dingy Shet, Tenikiwa chamber, Lamirimbach and the Sheikh of Kim Zen Kari, Lamna, that's the Sheikh of Kim Zenima, Sukore, Tinema.
Tonight, then we'll continue in our text, and we continue to look at why the Lamrim texts are presented first with the practices that are common or shared with the spiritual aspirant of initial capacity. Thereafter, the practices that are shared with a spiritual aspirant of intermediate capacity. So that's where we'll commence tonight.
That's it. La dedar je koi begi kimseni. Cheshindu jubigi goni janjub chodo simge baale shen mebe janjub chodo simge goi laas.
Starting then in the middle of page 17. I'll just check where I can read up to. And why is so much emphasis placed upon the practices of high capacity? Because there is no door to the Mahayana other than bodhicitta. You must therefore develop it. So here we find the answer to the question of why does one, if one has the aspiration to become a bodhisattva and a Buddha for the sake of others, does the Lamrim insist that one has to first train in the practices that are shared with the being of initial capacity, and thereafter train in the practices that are shared with a spiritual aspirant of intermediate capacity? And that is because these are the preliminaries to generate bodhicitta. And bodhicitta is the boundary for a boundary which must be crossed for a practitioner to be called a Mahayanist. For example, if you ask, is someone inside or outside? It depends if they've crossed the threshold of the doorway. If they have, then they're inside. If they have not, then they're still outside. And likewise, there's one and one boundary alone that has to be crossed for someone to be considered a Mahayanist, and that is the generation of bodhicitta. So in this paragraph it states explicitly that the doorway or the entranceway through which one has to pass to be considered a Mahayanist is a generation of bodhicitta. Then the text continues, to do this, you begin by contemplating its benefits and thereby generate a longing to attain it. So as it says here, in order to generate bodhicitta, one has to reflect repeatedly on the benefits of bodhicitta. And the reason to reflect repeatedly is to give rise to a strength of mind that is intent on achieving bodhicitta, having seen these amazing benefits that follow from having generated this mind. One gives rise to a longing, a sense of great joy that is committed to striving to achieve enlightenment, generate bodhicitta and to become a Buddha for the sake of others. So this is then what's emphasized here in the next paragraph.
And in it, that changes in my pioneer tongue, said that changes in your pioneer, that young to bottom ever, you say, never your dad, but Junju Chimonale, Jacky Liu Tong, what Dinia, changes in your pioneer, good bear, Monson, and Tongura, Dinia Zadang, the changes in your pioneer, said Dele, Tangajele, Janju Sim, Chikom, Chiangan, the Gule Giawa Yina, Langa, to get said Dele, in the deeper Chimbo Masaba, Giawaman, deeper Chimbo Sayo, and a deeper dear, and the Chikam San.
Here it's been emphasized the need to reflect on the advantages, the benefits of generating bodhicitta. And nowhere are these benefits of bodhicitta presented more clearly and more eloquently that in the first chapter of Santideva's Way of Life of Bodhisattvas. But we don't have time to look at that chapter now, but in brief, if one generates bodhicitta, then in this life, one will not accumulate strong negativities at all. And moreover, previously, vast stores of previously accumulated negativities will be purified through the generation of bodhicitta. Moreover, powered by bodhicitta, all one's meritorious acts in this life have unimaginable strength. So this, and for these and many other reasons, we need to reflect on the great qualities of bodhicitta. And furthermore, the great qualities of generating bodhicitta include that one's mind becomes very calm, very peaceful. Strong afflictions do not ripen in one's mind because of the power of bodhicitta, and therefore one's mind is calm, peaceful, and spacious. Moreover, any physical ailments don't overwhelm one because of the presence of bodhicitta. Moreover, all one's activities, whether physical or verbal, are focused on benefiting others, and thereby one doesn't harm others. So from these and other illustrations, one sees that there are innumerable benefits for oneself as well as others for generating bodhicitta. And in brief, one accumulates vast stores of merit in this life and in future lives under the influence of bodhicitta. Throughout this life and our subsequent lives, we accumulate incredible stores of virtue, and therefore Buddhahood rapidly nears. If we think of the phenomenal bodhisattvas in this world that we've met, or beings with strongly developed bodhicitta in their continuum, such as His Holiness or Lama Zopa and others, just recalling them brings joy to our mind. Merely hearing their name brings joy to our mind, let alone if we are in their presence or in particular receiving teachings from them. Such joy arises in our minds. And this is all due to the power, the strength of their bodhicitta.
Nyebe samba da zubi samba kongro tsubu dinigi samba pe jiyeba shine dinigi shu chenbu samdangan jiyeba ina dinigi midi jera chenbu shine dinigi midi yuebe kabla nganzu thakura tali mi ma usyo ina mi chasang samba nala ya jik namda rulu da jik majiwara shima da jiwa yaya ma ada digi gara shi yaya samba digi gara jiwa da jika nganzu kanga jiga sambi shen nala shi da namda rulu shima da dena ala zina gana ala zina ngo marwa diga san samba nala ya
And we probably also have experience of people who are quite the opposites. So when we're in the presence of someone who has a strongly negative attitude, whose personality is very negative and destructive, who has strong anger, who's got a strong mind such as harmful intent, we know that being in their presence destroys any peace of mind. We become quite anxious and uptight, or even hearing that they are approaching or that we may meet them destroys any peace of mind. And this likewise is due to a similar reason that due to the great strength of their negativity, this has a harmful impact on others.
So du jabane da ni nyu na du bane din na du re se ne gap ki phaye da thar duk se so sim ji ji phaye ya du na ne gap ta thar duk ki phaye ni le ni na du du so ni le so ni le ne gap mon ji de de jang sim ji la din ne de la du tup tup sa tup se do
ta tup yang sik pin ba
thar duk la ki me se la wa.
And you know, the text presents the benefits in a very condensed form, the benefits of generating bodhicitta. There are two kinds, temporary and ultimate, of which temporarily bodhicitta generates the joyful fruit of a high rebirth. So when this term here, benefits, this here has a synonymous meaning to where we have fruit or result, because the result of bodhicitta is the benefits of bodhicitta. And so these benefits of bodhicitta can be condensed into those which are temporary and those which are ultimate. But in brief, we could say that it brings great peace of mind to ourselves, and also it brings peace of mind to all those that we encounter, both directly as well as indirectly. Also, we don't bring any harm to others, but we only benefit others. We ease the burden of pain and suffering of others, even on a temporary basis. So this is one way to abbreviate the temporary benefits of bodhicitta. And again, reading from the text, temporarily, bodhicitta generates the joyous fruit of a high rebirth. And that result of a good rebirth is something that is achieved with great ease, without any effort at all. In the Tibetan of this line, it alludes to that there are other benefits beyond these that are experienced in this life. So these would refer to what has already been mentioned, such as the happiness that is experienced in this life already, in the very life that one generates bodhicitta, and the beneficial impact that the generation of bodhicitta in one's own continuum will have on all those one encounters. When immediately, through the generation of bodhicitta in one's own continuum, all those one encounters, one not only doesn't harm them, but benefits them, and at the very least, eases their burden of suffering. So there are a whole host of temporary benefits that come to the generation, that follow the generation of bodhicitta.
And this result
of a high rebirth as a human or God, this is something that is achieved with great ease. And that's also emphasized here in this first line. It's possible that when you recall what the main cause is, or the explicit cause for a good rebirth as a human or God, that of ethics, then one may think reading this, oh, if one generates bodhicitta, then there's no need for ethics, because it says with bodhicitta, then a good rebirth as a human and God is easily achieved. Oh, so then there's probably no need to practice ethics or to cultivate the mind of ethics.
Dunga seye ge dandala sanyo kubwa thobar chingi sida di nyamne chidi kabla 아니 심지 동화세야다 심지 디기주야라 류마 유스미 롱아주의 톤에 펜바 가리 줍두미나 펜바 줍구어로 진짜 진빈이면 제 용거래 진짜 니니에서 심지 탐지기 돈다 산지고마 토바지기 시체에도 진짜 심지 탐지기 돈다 산지고마 토바지기 시체에도 심지기 돈다래 현에 펜바 줍여기 돈다래 최 냠리자래 강에 가서이나 지인세비 뽑아지는 세비님의 지고래 진짜 현리야 현기 뇌바로 진짜 현기 소설이야 지금 예주의 니기 제바 이내 될야 지금 심지어 돈다 산지고마 토바지는 심지어 인지에 시도 인텔이야 세복공공공공공 지난 장주 심리하면 제외 정도 진바 출연 제바 전주 님의 차산디 에고 랑슈기 리용고래 제대 되는다 장주 심리하면 제바나 하다 미고바 토그레시디 귤 장주 심리하면 제디 에 가서래 원조고바 토유 출임 뒤에 송공고래 한 송고르디 최고래 아니 되네 에 원조고바 토스네 된데라 원주의 보통 토보 중요하기 진배님은 지고르디다 라데미고 되기 디지털과 제가 최 전류의 님의 지고래 제가 되는다 아니 전류스님 님의 제가 이나 아니 사람이 고바 터비기 아니 제보 대기뇨야기 요 그래서 대 좀 김대로 되다 제가 이제 술은 마송 받아 수비 님의 맞아 받아 지민 님의 맞아 받아 전류스님 지고 공대 되는지요 맞아 전류스님 님의 지도 라신이래 고바데 됐어
How it works that through the generation of bodhicitta, good rebirths are easily attained is because it's through having generated bodhicitta that one naturally is drawn to accumulating the causes that lead to a good rebirth as a human or god. So if you recall the four primary causes that are required for a good rebirth as a human or god, and a bodhisattva has generated bodhicitta, then with these powerful minds of love and compassion, as well as the altruistic attitude of universal responsibility, this bodhisattva will do anything and everything they can to benefit others, and will be very careful not to bring any harm or difficulty or added burden to suffering beings. So because of the great care that bodhicitta leads to, then it's very easy for the bodhisattva to generate the mind of restraint, an ethical outlook. And with this mind that is restrained, then the bodhisattva will not engage in physical actions which bring harm to others or speak to others in a way that brings harm. So therefore, the practice of ethics is easily accomplished. And moreover, with the mind of bodhicitta, the bodhisattva will be intent on benefiting others in any way they can. And therefore, the practice of generosity, the mind that wants to give, the mind that wants to help, this will naturally be generated, and the bodhisattva will utilize any and every opportunity to bring benefits to others. And thereby, they will naturally practice generosity with their material resources, with their skills and their talents and so forth. And with this powerful mind of bodhicitta, whenever the bodhisattva encounters adverse circumstances, no matter the cause, the mind will stay undisturbed, will stay calm and spacious, allowing the virtuous qualities of bodhicitta and wisdom to arise, and thereby respond with wisdom and bodhicitta. So in this way, patience is practiced with great ease. Patience, the mind that remains undisturbed in the face of adversity. And if that adversity comes from other sentient beings, the bodhisattva will naturally give rise to compassion for the suffering being, and thereby the mind will remain patient. Or if patience comes if the bodhisattva, the cause for potential mental disturbance is either in the practicing of the Dharma or from some inner turmoil, the bodhisattva's bodhicitta and wisdom will be so powerful that the mind will stay undisturbed, and therefore no matter what the source of potential mental turmoil is, the mind will stay patient. And then for the fourth cause, that of joyous perseverance, this too naturally arises with a strong and overpowering wish to be of benefit to others, to accumulate merit in order to guide beings to enlightenment. Then that is a mind of joyous perseverance. So therefore, all the virtue that is accumulated is of great strength. So in this way, through the generation of bodhicitta, naturally, the causes that lead to good rebirths are accumulated.
내가 타바다 탐지 캠비고 와마도 와지 하다 미고 와섬 톱지 되바네 디디기들 내가 디디기스 마도 아니 내가 때 디기스 마도 남자 디체레 아니 두마 요아야 되스고 다 두마 두마 윈에 마현에 게 타 탈치요 말레스 진 다디 내가 블라 베나 하다 미고 와 톱디 베네 디 내가 때라 한지 디기트스 신아 인고레스 야 디네 신이야 지게 나서다 나녀와다 이자도 준조 기선 야 동화만 보니 뭐 차별했어 내가 그때 길이에서 올라대서 내가 그때 길이 제가 자주 쌤 냠는 제바이나 되네게 내가 그 고발하다 미고 번 토야다 하다 미고 번 톱네 땡텔야 하다 미 디유냐기 디기디야 자주 쌤 냠세 냠는 제발에 되네 좁토고래서 내가 그때 길이 두고래서 디세다
As sentient beings, we all have an innermost yearning for happiness. And there are two types of happiness. There's the happiness we're familiar with, temporary happiness, and there's the happiness that we truly long for, and that is ultimate happiness. So ultimate happiness is happiness that is never interrupted by even a moment of slight discomfort. And there are only two states that are achieved where the happiness that is experienced is of this type. And the first is if one achieves liberation from samsara, the state of a foe destroyer. Then one has completely abandoned afflictions together with their seeds, and therefore there's no a source for suffering. And therefore, with no arisal of suffering, one only experiences happiness. And this is the first of the two types of ultimate happiness. The second is when one abandons even the stains of the afflictions and one arises as a Buddha. Then two, one's happiness is ultimate happiness in that a Buddha can never experience even the slightest of discomforts. But the happiness that we have experience of and gods have experience of is temporary happiness, and is temporary because it is so very impermanent. It is continued, whatever happiness is experienced is continuously and almost immediately interrupted by further suffering. And so therefore, in our lives as humans or gods, not only is the happiness that one experiences temporary, but one's situation in such a rebirth is very unstable. And when death comes, there is no guarantee that one will achieve a similar rebirth. There is the very real possibility that one may fall into the realms of great suffering. And the reason for this is because humans and gods have not gone beyond suffering. They have not attained liberation. They have not attained lasting, ultimate happiness. So a bodhisattva is not yet a foe destroyer. A bodhisattva is a human or god. They will very, very easily achieve the causes to experience these rebirths, as further rebirths as a human or god, and therefore the happiness of humans and gods.
타두 외디기 주야 되나 나 전주 셈나 되나 죽수 고래 주제 변나 타두 타두 탐제 캠비고 와양 셈제라 되네 주에 자주 주도 셈제 고라 세스지게 타두
then the next line gives the presentation of the second type of happiness, or here we can include it in the second benefit, or the second kind of benefit of bodhicitta. Ultimately, it gives rise to the liberated, omniscient wisdom of Buddhahood. The ultimate happiness, this is something that is too that achieved by bodhisattvas. In fact, this is the goal of bodhisattvas. They are focused on rapid spiritual progression in order to be of ever greater benefit to others. So as a byproduct of their training, they achieve temporary happiness, but their goal of ultimate happiness, this is quickly achieved because of the power of their bodhicitta. So therefore, as our text says, hence it is indispensable, bodhicitta is indispensable.
Those
who generated bodhicitta, they achieve both of these types of happiness. As a byproduct, the temporary happiness of ongoing good rebirths, and they can be, as they develop, they will rapidly approach the attainment of liberation from suffering, and in fact, the great liberation, that of enlightenment, and thereby achieve also ultimate happiness. Those who have generated bodhicitta, so bodhisattvas, they do not have as a goal to achieve liberation from samsara. Because to have a goal to achieve liberation from samsara, one needs to be very focused on eliminating one's own affliction so that one can go beyond suffering oneself and thereby achieve one's own peace. But this is not what a bodhisattva is focused on. A bodhisattva is not focused on their own contentment, on their own happiness. They focus on alleviating the suffering of others. Their focus is so intent on alleviating the suffering of others that they are not concerned about any suffering that they may encounter and have to put up with or endure. That doesn't bother them in the least. They are solely focused on helping others, and if that means they have to encounter hardships and difficulties, they will do so with joy. But as they spiritually progress, they will progress through the various stages of development, but their focus, their intent, is not to achieve liberation.
Paradilya sanjogo mado gedina dunga susurara kanga shunyong go na dinde disamare sambe gedina samno yosi rwa chida dinne da jenju sim nyamnen jeba ina ane chige jenju pena cholam da cho chung chung dinne ka bla ya susugi subulya che dinne kanga le yosi gi de dinne ya jenju sim ba papa se tonam ba se de thoksa wa ina dinne da chumba to wale やはりこう、かすね、どうもせれ、たわきね、ああ、匂いまでま、どうも出番ね、出番まで、どうもやられ。ではまして、シェンや、ペンパ、ジャチも、ジュトゴで。じゃ、ちょっとね、ね、チャメンビ、ダジュンビ、ジュボトバナ、ソスギ、ディギダ、デンバリマド、シェンや、ペンパ、ジャチも、ジュトゴまで。てね、だ、じゃ、ちょっとね、パブリックボバン、トソね、で、サンジュボバン、マトバナ、ペン、マセ、ジャチも、シェンや、ペンパ、ジャチも、ジュヤタ、ランニーね、出番ね、出番まで、どうもせ、匂いまで。
So in hearing this, it's possible one may think, but for bodhisattvas not achieving liberation, then enlightenment for bodhisattva must be so far away. The way to understand this is the bodhisattva's focus, their intent, is on the welfare of others, not themselves. But their own welfare is a byproduct of their intent, of their training. So the reality is the bodhisattva on the beginning of the five parts, on the beginner parts, the trainee parts, those of accumulation and preparation, bodhisattvas will experience, for example, some physical problems. But these will not overwhelm them or deter them in any way. Moreover, when they gain a direct realization of emptiness, they become an Arya bodhisattva, so from the path of seeing, they will experience no further suffering. They will experience only happiness. And then, if one compares an Arya Bodhisattva to a Theravadan Arhat, there is a huge difference between them. And the Jansuk Sempa, Apakpa Jansuk Sempa, Dang Su Durkirepe, the... So comparing an Arya Bodhisattva, so a Bodhisattva from the path of seeing onwards, to a foe destroyer, a Theravadan foe destroyer, so being a Theravadan practitioner who has achieved liberation, so he's even more developed than a Theravadan Arya, and is a foe destroyer, an Arhat. An Arhat has only achieved their own happiness, their own bliss, their own freedom from suffering. That is all. It's a great achievement, one doesn't want to deprecate it, but that is their achievement, they have achieved their happiness. A bodhisattva, though, from an earlier stage, from becoming an Arya being, so from the path of seeing, they experience only happiness, no suffering at all, only great bliss. But moreover, they can be of incredible benefit to others. The benefit that they can bring to others is inconceivable from what those on the Theravadan Arya paths can achieve. And in bodhisattvas, Arya bodhisattvas are able to bring benefit to others whilst themselves only experiencing happiness, not even the slightest of discomfort.
Jesus men ya agar dul ya men jabche ko men na seba na jiwa re che chen shu sen pe ge gi gi nyu mo ji da chen shu sen pa de nyu mo pa pe ti pa ji so ji yo ma kon ju ge ni ti kon ju ge be je ta le shen le pen pe ju ge be je ta tu ro je sa nga ro so ba na nga ro ju ge nyu mo wan so wa ja nyu mo bu wan so wa de nga ro ju ge nyu mo wa de ju tu ro ma le je sa chen shu sen pa ge nyu mo de ge chen shu sen pe wan de ju tu ro be je ta tu ro le je sa shen le pen pe ja wa tu ro je sa nyu mo ge chen shu sen pa de nyu ge ma le
네, 제 거 말씀. 전세대 센터 낭노나 박파 박파. And furthermore, an arahat we know is a being that has completely abandoned the afflicted minds together with their seeds. Hence, they are liberated from the afflicted minds, liberated from suffering. An arya bodhisattva is not yet liberated from the afflicted minds. So this can cause some doubt, thinking. An Arya Bodhisattva that has not completely abandoned the afflictions together with their seeds, how is it that they don't suffer? Because they still have afflictions. And this, and the reason that they don't suffer at all is because of the incredible strength of mind that comes with bodhicitta, that is in union with the wisdom realizing emptiness, ultimate bodhicitta. The afflictions cannot harm them. In fact, not only can afflictions not harm them, they add to the bodhisattva's strength in that the bodhisattva with ease is able to take those, transform those afflictions on the path and thereby not suffer but gain ever greater mental strength. Just like in the material world, medical researchers can take snake venom and make an antidote. So from poison, one can make medicine. And likewise, from the poisons that are the afflictions, an Arya Bodhisattva is not at all harmed by this. But in fact, it strengthens their mind, strengthens their ability to be of benefit to others. So this is the case for Arya Bodhisattvas. Us, of course not. The afflictions tend still to rule us. Bodhisattvas, though, they are the master of their destiny. They are the master of their own minds.
Changyu 슈시 암주스 고투고 산이 최몽을 진이 오늘 앤디 맞아 아니 주버 먹고 된다고 주버 먹고 돼 주버 먹고 되네 되네 그 주비기 되네 마저 류기 자라 류 자다 되네 주시 먹고 되네 되네 아니 계속 주버래래야 미 먹고래야 先 콜 먹고래 최셰야다 先 팬버 주야다 되네 게 자신 못 주투고 제가 처음 진세 토데 띵이 진게 뉴베 되네 산지구 암초기
When a practitioner generates actual uncontrived bodhicitta in a continuum, they enter the bodhisattva path of accumulation and they're counted amongst the bodhisattvas. And when they enter the path of accumulation, the first of the five paths, this has three divisions. The first being the small level of the path of accumulation. And as they train and develop their various qualities, accumulating ever greater merit and good qualities, they progress then from the small level of the path of accumulation to the middle level, and eventually to the great level, the highest part of the path of accumulation. When they achieve the middle level of the path of accumulation, so bear in mind this path of accumulation is the first of the five paths, so they still new bodhisattvas. Already, because of the great strength of mind and virtue that they've accumulated, when they see any Buddha statue such as this one here, that Buddha statue, they will be able to receive teachings directly from the Buddha statue. This is not something, of course, that we can do because we haven't developed those qualities in our minds. Moreover, a bodhisattva then can already start to send emanations, send about 100 emanations, and those 100 emanations can teach the Dharma to others, guide others in how to overcome their afflictions, and be of great benefit to others. And as the bodhisattva continues to develop, bearing in mind again, this is just at the middle level of the very first path, as they continue to develop their good qualities, their qualities grow ever greater, and their ability to be of outstanding benefit to others grows ever stronger.
The
rather desperate situation that ordinary beings like ourselves and others find ourselves in is that on our continuum we have a vast store of strong negative deeds that, should they ripen at the time of death, will lead to rebirth in the lower realms, including in hell. And this is the state that ordinary beings find ourselves in. We're always in the danger of death and potential rebirth in hell. However, if we were to generate bodhicitta in this life, or for those beings who in this life are generating bodhicitta, then should those previously accumulated negative deeds ripen and result in rebirth even in hell, because of the power of their bodhicitta, they will immediately take rebirth from the hell. It would be like a ball dropping down, hitting the ground and bouncing up immediately. In the same way, a bodhisattva, should they end up taking rebirth in hell due to previously accumulated negativities, would immediately be reborn out of the hell. Furthermore, we should look at the consequence of the bodhisattva striving for the goal of enlightenment for the sake of others. Because it may sound like, but a bodhisattva is striving for enlightenment, and that is their goal, and all their virtues dedicated to enlightenment for the sake of others, then because it's not their goal to achieve liberation from suffering, well, do they achieve liberation from suffering?
Tarbi Gopa Thoba Tarba Thoya Ki Digi Chasa
So the doubt may be because Buddhahood is the goal, and we've heard that the achievement of bodhicitta brings the attainment of Buddhahood ever nearer. Does this have an impact on the attainment of liberation from suffering? So as when bodhicitta is generated and Buddhahood does approach, the achievement of Buddhahood, the attainment of Buddhahood does near. But so too does the achievement of liberation. And this is because in order to be of greatest benefit to others, the bodhisattva trains in all the teachings of the Buddha, in the Thai realm of the variety of aspects of the Buddha Dharma, in order to be able to benefit beings from a position of experience based on knowledge. Secondly, everything the Buddha taught was taught from his motivation to lead beings to enlightenment. So whilst the teaching may explicitly lead to a differing goal, implicitly, through those practices, eventually enlightenment would be achieved. So the entire Buddha Dharma is focused on the eventual attainment of enlightenment. And then going along with this, bodhisattvas, whilst focused on achieving enlightenment, they are practicing or cultivating in their minds all the aspects of the Buddha Dharma so that they can guide beings skillfully based on their own experience and in accordance with their individual personalities of trainees. That in brief are some of the vast benefits that followed from the generation of bodhicitta in one's own continuum. And then this is something to reflect on to give rise to the longing to become a bodhisattva. And then furthermore, to look at our text, the bottom of the 17th page, as a prerequisite for bodhicitta, you must generate great compassion that is unable to tolerate the sufferings of all sentient beings. So here now we come to an important presentation, because if one does give rise to the wish to become a bodhisattva for the welfare of all beings, it's important one knows how to train and train in the correct sequence and not start from the wrong point, but start training in the correct sequence.
Dunga Dunga的大国身边，什么的里头嘛那些，今天今天在党部宿舍上来了，年纪轻薄，什么讲？他们就咚啊的炸糊涂，什么年纪大了，结巴了，念了宿舍上了，咚啊，人家住的些什么大？今天今天今天咚啊，今天今天多啊，身边什么大？今天在那，今天个咚啊，得了得马上的他们，咚啊得了，他糊涂身边，那宿舍上来的咚啊，他就给落修，炸过去，过过去，修起不起，过过来去的，再来咚啊去，那我让咚啊去，那我啦。
Midi
Okay.
The cause for generating bodhicitta is the generation of great compassion. But if one were to embark immediately on the generation of great compassion, one would not be able to achieve that result. And that is because one hasn't done the preliminaries or accomplished the prerequisites. So these then are mentioned at the top of the 18th page. This great compassion for others depends upon an intense awareness of the undesirable experiences and sufferings of your own continuum. So this is a point that must be understood. In order to generate the sincere wish, in order to generate compassion, great compassion, which is the wish to lead all beings to a state freed of suffering, coming through the elimination on the causes of suffering, in order to actually generate that mind, one has to understand what suffering is. And one needs to understand it not just intellectually, but experientially. And the way to understand it experientially is first in relation to one's own experience. So that it's not a mere intellectual understanding, but an experiential understanding. And therefore, in dependence on reflecting on the sufferings that one oneself experiences, one then has the basis to apply that to others and generate compassion. And there's a clear a dependency in that the stronger the results in compassion comes about in this independence on the strength of the cause, which is the reflection on one's own experiences of suffering.
Dunga
Has to be emphasized, it has to be understood very clearly that if one has the aspiration to generate genuine bodhicitta, one needs to generate first compassion. And to actually generate compassion, one has to first come to a clear understanding of suffering and its causes. And not intellectual, but experiential, which means in relation to oneself. So one has to engage in intense meditation on suffering. And then when one gives rise to an overwhelming wish to be liberated from suffering, to be freed of suffering oneself, one is then ready to take that that realization and apply it to the situation that others find themselves in. So this is a definite sequence. And therefore, when we start out to reflect on our own suffering, the starting point of reflecting on suffering is, as the text goes on to say, first train in the practices of lower capacity by contemplating the miseries experienced in the lower realms. So the starting point to meditate on suffering is to meditate on the sufferings of the lower realms. And here we start with the suffering of animals, because we can directly observe this, and then and following this, we reflect on the sufferings experienced by spirits and by the hell beings. We reflect on these sufferings knowing that we ourselves have created the causes that, if ripened at the time of death, we will take such a rebirth. We need to reflect on these sufferings as if we are to experience them. And having effectively meditated on the sufferings of the lower realms, the sufferings that potentially await all of us, then one gives rise to the wish to be liberated from the possibility of falling into the lower realms. Then one is ready to move on to the next level of meditation. Because it's clear from my own experience that merely not being born in the lower realms doesn't mean one experiences lasting, stable happiness. We know this isn't the case for humans, and we also therefore need to reflect on the situation of gods. And then here we come to the next part of the meditation. Then taking up the intermediate practices by contemplating the transient nature of the joys of the happier migrations. So here one reflects that wherever one is born in cyclic existence, as long as one is trapped within the realms of samsara, not just where the suffering is of greatest intensity in the lower realms, but even in the so-called happy migrations of humans and gods, one continues to suffer. And this is because even the happiness that is experienced in the realms of humans and gods is deceptive. And it's in its nature, it is still suffering. But even in the happiest of states, and of the desire realm gods, they still suffer. Many gods experience jealousy, others experience warfare. So here we need to engage in further meditation on suffering of humans and of gods, coming to the conclusion that wherever one is born, one is not freed of suffering. As long as one remains bound in samsara, all one's experiences in samsara of the experience in samsara, there are none that are worthy of striving for as a goal in itself, as a lasting goal, because as long as one remains bound in samsara, one will suffer. And this is then presented in the next line. From this contemplation arises renunciation of everything in samsara. In order to give rise to this wish for renunciation from everything in samsara, the starting point is to engage first in the practices shared with the being of initial capacity, or the spiritual aspirant of initial capacity, and then progress to the practices that are shared with the spiritual aspirant of the being of intermediate capacity. Because if one goes through in this sequence, we're engaging in these meditations based on both our own experience based on our own experience and what we observe, then strong wish to be liberated from suffering, first from the lower realms, and later suffering from samsara in its entirety, will arise within us. And the whole time we're engaging in these meditations, we are engaging in meditations that are shared with the being of initial capacity, and the meditations shared with the being of intermediate capacity. And this implies that our goal that we have in mind is the goal of the being of greatest capacity, the goals of the Mahayana, the goals of enlightenment. But we are engaging as in the preliminaries, in the reflections first on the sufferings of the lower realms and then that the happier migrations. But we're doing so in order to achieve enlightenment for the sake of others, in order to generate bodhicitta, in order to generate great compassion. So therefore, we are engaging in the practices not of a being of initial or intermediate capacity, but the practices that are shared with them, because our goal is far greater. Nevertheless, we engage in these meditations reflecting on our own situation. And when we've given rise to a strong wish to renounce samsara, or to definitely emerge from the suffering states of samsara, that is when we are truly ready to take out our experience And our experience from these meditations and apply it to the experience of others. And here we come to reflect that these realizations that we've had in relation to our own experience in terms of what potentially awaits us in our future rebirths, as well as the suffering that we experience now as humans, this applies to all other ordinary beings. And in so many ways, we really do not differ, myself and others. We all only want to experience happiness. None of us wants to suffer. But we all are suffering uncontrollably due to the same reason, the contaminated karma that we have all created due to our own afflicted minds. Seeing the similarity between ourselves and others, we come to understand that really amongst the ways we differ are that I am only one and others are countless in number. So I as one cannot be more important than them. I cannot be the primary object of focus. It has to be this vast number, especially when reflecting on the kindness they've shown and so forth. So here we are then ready to turn our attention to others. And this then is expressed in the next paragraph. Finally, thinking that all mother beings face the same sufferings as you do generates compassion. From compassion, we generate love for others to us, as it says, and thereafter, bodhicitta. Here we've bodhicitta coming from having generated the altruistic attitude of universal responsibility. Here the text mentions it. Generate compassion, love, and bodhicitta, the aspiration for enlightenment as the best means to fulfill that love and compassion. So what this is alluding to is having generated love and compassion, one will naturally look for how can I fulfill these aspirations, and this is where we commit to becoming a Buddha for the sake of others, and that is the mind of bodhicitta. So, and then the text continues, thus leading aspirants to the highest capacity of practice by first training their minds in the two lower capacities is a supreme, perfect approach to the Dharma. So the point that is being made clearly here is that if one has the aspiration to become a bodhisattva, to give rise to the actual mind of bodhicitta within ourselves and have this this incredible beneficial impact on the lives of others, one has to train in this definite sequence. First, meditating on the practices shared with the being of smallest capacity, but with an intention to generate bodhicitta. And then progressing to generate in the practices shared with the being of intermediate capacity, but with the intention to generate bodhicitta. And then entering into the practices that are unique to the beings of supreme capacity. So this is the definite sequence to train in order to generate bodhicitta.
Then he came to China, that was in some time. ငါဆုံးတဲ့ထာဝရသမီးတိကိမတုအဆင်ငါဆုံးတဲ့ထာနာထာသာမီကိုပါထောပါရင်းနေရကျေစံငါကအစမတဲ့ဒုငါပေါတုမေဘညောရတို့ကျေစံဒီနေစားလေဒါညုံမောင်ကခေါ်ဝါလေကြဲဝါလေကျေစံဒုငါမတုမင်းတို့ကျေစံဒုငါတဲ့လက်မထနဲ့တပ်မင်းတို့အဆင်ပြေစံလို့ရှိတာရတဲ့
ဒီတားဆွေကျေလာဒါကျေစံရံဆဲဒီရံဒုငါလေထာဘောပါနာရှင်ဒါရံတာရံတဲ့ဆင်ကျင် mire dundore semjen leda nyumo ojo kolwe ge tatina le mida ha da dundo kane chi ne ta ka ma dine chi thon de yare cha ka ma dine ta gu du semjen da chi dunga le ma tan da ta min semjen dunga ta gu du sembe dunga da dana sem de dine ko ni je ro sam da ni ko mya sam da chi da dunga da ta gu da semjen da ju dunga da da ji ya sa ji sa ko ya de ngi ji gi ne sam bi ge chi da dine ta me semjen tham ji do sa ji shen gi dunga se ya da di gi du be ya la ngi
စံကြောကဘာမှာသူတို့ထပ်မင်းတို့ကျေစံစံကြောကဘာထောက်ရွှေစံချင်းဒီစံတိုင်းတဲ့ကြာကျေစံချေကိုရယ်စံကြောကဘာထောက်ရွှေစံချေသာတဲ့စံကြောကဘာထောက်ရွှေဒီရင်စံကြီးတာဒီရင်ကြီးဒူလျာနဲ့လူငါယေရှုမြေကျွတ်တဲ့သူရှင်ဆွေရတာလူငါယေရှုဆွေကြီးပြန်ကြတာလူငါယေရှုကံကြီးထောင်းတဲ့ရှင်လျာလူငါတဲ့ဆဲတဲ့ဒီကြီးတူရလျာဖန်ပတူရကြီးချင်းပြညံနဲ့ချေကြီးစံပေတာအနည်းချေ
ဒီနေ့ဆွေပြင်းညံမြင့်ချင်းအချမ်းလေဖန်ပတူရတာရှင်ကြီးတီကြီးတူရရံချေစင်ငါကျွေးညံမြင့်ချရတာကလည်းကစစ်ကျွမ်းတာကလည်းကလည်းမဆန်ပါချေကလည်းကြင်းစင်ပြီးဆွေပါချရတာအဲရှင်ကြီးနေပါလို့ချက်ဒီနေ့ရှင်းပိုင်တဲ့တဲ့လျာဖောက်ခွန်လဲလို့ခွန်လောင်းချစ်ပါနေပါကြည်မြဲစင်ပြီးဆွေပါကုန်များအဲဒီနေ့ကချမ်းလေဖဲ့ပြကြောက်တူရတာဂေးရကြောက်တူပြဲမဆရာဖို့ရဲစင်ချင်ဒီနေ့ကဂီဒီနာတီထူထူ ཁྱི
So the class tonight has been presenting reasons behind why we engage in practice in a particular order. So this needs to be understood, these reasons need to be understood so that one doesn't make the mistake of practicing in a mistaken order and thereby not achieving the desired attainments. So that's now some theory, how to put it into practice. Well, it's my hope that all of you can engage in the following meditation every day. It's the same meditation that has been presented many times, and one starts by generating the mind of refuge. And one generates refuge through generating the certainty that the three jewels present the unmistaken technique by which all sentient beings can be led to enlightenment. So here, with confidence in the Dharma and the Buddha and the Sangha, one goes for refuge, goes for protection to the Buddha, Dharma and Sangha, knowing that through cultivating the Dharma within one's own continuum, one achieves a protection from suffering and the ability to guide others to achieve their own protection from suffering, the generation of the various minds of the Dharma in their continuum. So that's the first step of the meditation. The second then is to reflect on suffering. And the order of reflecting on suffering is first to reflect on the suffering of the lower realms and do so in relation to the potential that resides on our own continuum, the potential of these negative imprints that we've accumulated that may ripen at the time of death and lead to rebirth in the lower realms. That possibility of suffering in the lower realms, of a rebirth in the lower realms, is still real for us. And generate the strong wish to be liberated from that possibility, to be freed from that possibility. And thereafter, reflect on the sufferings of the happier migrations. So as not to be complacent, thinking, oh well, if next life is like this life, that's good enough. But we need to see that there isn't, that merely to long for a rebirth such as we have now is insufficient. It's not utilizing this incredible human potential that we have, this unique human intelligence that can be transformed into mind such as bodhicitta. And thereby, through reflecting on the sufferings of the happier migrations, in the second step here, we generate the wish to be liberated from samsara in its entirety. And with that generated, the mind of definite emergence, we're ready to move to the third step. And that is to take the focus now from ourselves and to relate it to others, seeing that others are in the same position as us, desperate to be freed from suffering, but not even knowing that to the extent that they suffer and being blind to the causes of suffering. In this way, compassion for their situation arises. We generate the compassion, the wish for them to be freed from suffering in this cause is ever stronger, to the point where we see it as our personal responsibility to guide beings to generate their own individual enlightenment. And in this way we generate the mind of universal responsibility. And with this, we think so how to actually become a skilled guide. And we see that it's only a Buddha who knows each being's individual personality and thereby how best to influence them. And here we give rise to the mind of bodhicitta, the commitment to strive wholeheartedly for enlightenment for the sake of others. And this then is the third step of the meditation. The first was refuge, the second was suffering, the third was the generation of bodhicitta. Having generated bodhicitta, we come to the fourth, which is the practices of a bodhisattva, the perfections. And here, with this mind of bodhicitta generated, we commit to never harming others, to ensuring our mind stays restrained, or to express it differently, our mind stays ethical, the practice of ethics. And through this restrained mind, we will ensure we don't physically act in a way that brings harm to others or speak in a way that brings harm to others. Moreover, we generate the wish to only be of benefit to others, the mind of generosity. And thirdly, we generate the mind of patience, the mind that stays subdued in the face of adversity. Whether the adversity comes from others, compassion arises within us. If the adversity comes from our own inner turmoil, we transform this with our bodhicitta, our understanding of emptiness. And likewise, thirdly, with any problems and difficulties we encounter whilst practicing the Dharma, with strength of mind, our mind stays undisturbed. And in this way, we practice patience. And then fourthly, generate the mind of joyous perseverance, delighting in what we've achieving and the benefit that comes to all others through this. And that naturally leads to us wanting to cultivate minds of virtue ever more, to meditate more, to not be to be overwhelmed by any obstacles. And then these are the four steps of meditation. And these four steps come about, or the attainments of the result of bodhicitta here comes about independence on training in those practices that are shared with the beings of initial and intermediate capacity, but whilst having a motivation of engaging in those practices so as to become a bodhisattva. And then we conclude those four steps with dedication, dedicating in brief with an understanding of emptiness to the welfare of all beings. And we make aspirations then for blessings to our lamas, the buddhas, the bodhisattvas and our yidams. So this is the way to practice, and I hope then you take the theory of what was presented tonight and you transform that into experience. And the way to do that is to engage in this meditation, in this sequence, this definite sequence, repeatedly over a sustained period. And if one does, then results will definitely follow.
Okay.
So thank you. I've gone on a little late, so my apologies, and we'll conclude here. Thank you.